Well, we're just hoping it's going to be a good day today. It's the news, according to me. Hey, good morning. It is Friday, Shabbat Shalom. It is July 3rd, the day before July 4th, Independence Day. This is your Independence Day. This is your Independence Podcast. You're independent. I'm independent. I'm a dependent. I wear dependent. Depends underwear. I wear independent underwear. They have a... It's 7:32 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Friday, Financial Friday. So that's where we are right now. We have, we got a lot of things going on. Just a lot of things have happened this week. A lot of just rhetoric, a lot of, you know, bibbly book, bloggly book, blah, 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 stuff happening. It's just, there's never any end to all that. It just seems like there's just always, you know, stuff going on, rhetorical. we got some callers today. We got some callers to call in. We got some interesting folks on the line here waiting for us. In the meantime, I've got in my cup here. This is kind of exciting. I've got my main staple cup. You know, this is my rut cup. I call it. I'm in a rut. It's chai with coconut cream creamer. Nothing too exciting other than just, it's good. It's really good stuff. It's kind of a good little thing. It's my comfort cup. That's just good. It's nice and hot. It's good. Anyway, something weird happened in my mouth. I don't know if I bit something in the nice night or something. I don't know, like, bit like my cheek or something. Or it's like, anyway, and I keep biting it. So anyway, I have in my backup cup is the exciting thing today. It's my first taste of it so far. I just made this yesterday. May not be sweet enough. Oh, I know what happened. I put ice in there. I haven't touched it since I put ice in there, and it just I have some freshly brewed sweet tea with peaches in it, which is my peach sweet tea. I should probably put a little bit of. I think I may just put some peach flavoring from the other. I have just a little bit left in that one peach tea, a phony peach tea. It actually helps to keep it. There's just enough. Anyway, I might just put just a little bit of that in there just to kind of give it a little more. The peaches haven't had a chance to really release their flavor yet. It takes about 24 hours. We have to put the peaches in with the fresh peaches in with the sweet tea. And then it becomes really good. After about 2 days, it's really even really better. But it's I'll dress it up a little bit, make it a little bit better, make it a little more fun. Anyway, it's good. Don't get me wrong; it's good stuff. It's good stuff. All right. In the meantime, I was going to do something else. I can't remember what it was. I had something else I was going to talk about this morning before I got into everything. But hey, let's just play this. Be on with it. Be good.
Before we get started, here's what you should know. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you tuned in. I've got things to say and I don't know where to begin. But first a word, a little tiny word from me. This is entertainment, not a medical degree. I'm not a doctor, not a doctor, not a lawyer, not a lawyer, not a financial counselor. No, no, no. These are my opinions, just my take on things, not professional advice. Read the fine print, please. I'm here for your enjoyment. Nothing more, nothing less. But definitely don't sue me. I've given you my best. I might sound convincing when I get on a roll. And yeah, I googled that, so maybe I'm on a scroll. But for the real stuff, your body, your wallet, your rights, call a professional and maybe tune in Friday nights. Opinions, just opinions, just my thoughts, for entertainment, just entertainment. That's the shot. Now that we've covered all the legal stuff and more, let's get this show started. That's what you came here for.
The ending's kind of screwy, isn't it? It's kind of weird. The it should just be, that's what you came here for, and be done. I'll just edit that. I might have to do some editing on that one. Some other things happening. Oh, what's going on? Oh, I got it. I'm burning a CD in the background. I have, that's going to make a lot of noise for a little while. Didn't realize it was going to make that much noise. I didn't think it was that loud before. But I guess it's making a lot of noise. Anyway, you'll just have to put up with it. That's the sound of progress right there. That's what that is. Hey, we got some things to talk about. We have, I'm just going to take whoever shows up at the top of the list here. This thing automatically, depending on what I'm talking about, it automatically shuffles the deck over here in terms of who's calling in. Caller. By the way, there's no advertisements on this show. However, there is an app that I have developed. It's called the Podcast Caller. It's podcastcaller.com. And it's a little app that you can use. It's got these little characters. And you can... So I've got these people, I call them callers. They're little bots that call in. They have their own little... There's going to be more and more options for characters. There's different levels of usage on this thing as well. But it's just... of course, I have the premium premiere studio version. Unlimited access because it's mine. Anyway, you can get on there. It's a subscription thing you can get on. But that's the closest thing you're going to get to an advertisement for this particular. There's going to be I'm going to start a podcast as well. That is just called the Podcast Caller podcast, and it's if I can get the word podcast in there a few more times, it might be helpful. So I ended up Let's see what Skip has to say. Let's just go on. This is a prime example here of what we're doing. And we will... you know what? That causes... I just put... kind of the sound went away there for a second. Anyway. All right, play the caller here. You just get on with it.
Kevin, my man.
Yes, hello.
Quick question. Yeah. Bank of America just dropped their recession prediction entirely, but we've got weak job numbers and Goldman Sachs doing PR stunts with Trump accounts. Doesn't it feel like the big banks are just trying to keep retail investors calm while they position themselves? What's the real story behind this sudden optimism?
That's a good question. I see where you're going with that. That's some serious insight right there, folks. That's actually a possibility. That's something I don't necessarily. That's some heavy insight right there, actually. All of that is plausible. All of that is possible. The whole thing with. Here's the thing. There's two things going on here. One is the market itself. I think they may be factoring in some of the issues of the potential for our economy to really go into we may go into up to a 14 to 15 year boom. That's what might actually happen. What's going to happen? Now, normally you have a downturn every 7 to 8 years. There's typically on average, it's about 7 or 8 years. Sometimes we skip that. And we did, that happened recently. Actually, there was an 11-year to almost a 12-year period where there was no real dip in the market. We kept setting records the entire time. There was no dip. Well, I'm going to talk about that. I just saw something yesterday about that. It was how this, the difference between just consistent investment, putting $300 a week or whatever, or $300 a month, or whatever you put in, $100 a month, whatever it is you put in to the market, and you continue to invest that. And what high or low, it doesn't matter what the market's doing. You just continue with it. It just automatically comes out of your account. It's just boring. It just does it. You don't even pay attention to it. Market's up, market's down. You don't care. Or you sit around and wait for the dip. You keep your money stashed away, ready to buy low. And the difference between that over a 20-year period. We'll get into that a little bit. But it's an interesting concept, and the math does not work out well as well as you might think for either. Sometimes it all depends, but it's weird. It's a weird concept. It's not a weird concept. It's just a weird outcome for the concept. But this is very possible. The banks do have a tendency to want to manipulate things. So it would not surprise me if there would be some, getting themselves positioned, this idea of getting themselves positioned in the meantime. That's very possible. I don't know. That's pretty bold-faced if they are doing that. They can fall under all kinds of regulatory problems if they do anything that's kind of nefarious like that. However, they've done it in the past, and they tend to do it because they can get away with it typically. But that's the whole plausible deniability thing. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. I think that they're either looking at more of the factors, the numbers of the potential for our economy to actually roll through with everybody's pointing to, we're headed for a recession, stagflation, all this stuff is going to happen, all inflation, stagflation, whatever you want to call it. I don't think that's going to happen. However, I also don't, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. So there you go. There's that. So I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening with that. That's kind of, I guess I'm just stumbling over myself now, but it
now hold on. You're talking about a 14 to 15 year boom. But yeah. Back in my day, we didn't see cycles that long without at least a little air coming out of the balloon. So I'm skeptical on that one. That said, you're right about the dollar cost averaging thing. I've seen the numbers too, and trying to time the market beats most people who think they're smarter than they are. My question for you is, with hiring down to just 57,000 in June and inflation still sticky, what makes you think we actually avoid that downturn everyone's predicting?
Well, and here's that good. That's a good point. The issue, I think, in this whole thing with the long time boom, there's always going to be small corrections. You know, there's the monthly, weekly reports, some corrections here and there. There's always those kinds of things. I would call it more of a lull in the growth. We don't see a huge economic downturn like we did I think it was year 2000. I think 2000 had one or 2001. And there was one in 2008. Of course, everybody knows about that one, the big one. 2020, of course, that was the long stretch we had there was from 2009, I think, to 2020. And then we had I kind of skipped over one there a little bit. But then, of course, then the COVID thing, happened. And then it was all screwed up from that point on because we messed with the economy so much. Oh, that's just letting me know that my CD is done, I guess. I have... So that's what's happening, I think, with some of that. Now, good point, though. There are some economic factors. There are some things here and there that I think are that are issues. One of those being the jobs report. So it's, but again, the downturns, the small downturns, the small lulls, the small corrections, I think have to be looked at for what they are, because I think we get. It's that long when you have an 8 month dip, that's the big deal. When you have a 1 month dip here and there, a correction, maybe 1 or 2 months where you have a transient type dip of some kind, or a particular market sector happens to take a hit and that kind of causes some problems. That's very different than having the entire nation a nationwide kind of dip. That stays down for 8 to 9 months. That's a whole other ball game. But that's kind of what I'm just referring to there. In case, just to clarify that with that, I don't mean to confuse you there. Little skippy.
Look, you're drawing a real distinction there between a hiccup and actual damage. I'll give you that one. But here's what bugs me. You're saying COVID messed with the economy so much we can't read the signals anymore. Yet you're betting we skip the normal correction cycle anyway, and that feels like wishful thinking to me.
Well, it is wishful thinking. I'm always wishing for the good for something good, but I mean, but it's just to be clear, the what I'm saying is there are all kinds of other factors, and it's not just about COVID. I think you're kind of confused on that kind of that whole thing there, Skippy. We have there's a lot of other factors involved, and one of the, some of the things that, like the tariffs, this is not never played into be a factor. The whole purpose of the tariffs was to get financial stuff moved into the country to get financial investment from other countries, and rather than just having them make things cheaply over there, they can make them over here, bring their infrastructure here, avoid the tariffs, and employ U.S. workers. And so this is, you know, a boon to, you know, job market, as far as job market goes. When there's too many jobs and not enough workers, then you have people competing for workers, and that just raises rates. It raises the pay. The people, you know, they're willing to pay more, pay a premium to get good workers because they need them. And so, as long as we can fulfill those, you know, as long as the American people step up. Now, since COVID happened, there's people actually have kind of stopped working. When you're told your job is unessential and you just stay home and somebody sends you a check, it does have something to do. It does do something to your psyche, and the psyche of the nation, I'm afraid, is somewhat damaged because of that, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. What do I know? I'm just a...
Oh my gosh, Kevin. Microphone. Hi. So I'm trying to plan my 4th of July BBQ, and literally everything costs so much more this year, like record high prices. But then I see articles saying the 4% retirement rule is showing its age. Does this mean I should just give up on ever retiring and accept expensive hot dogs forever? This is so depressing.
I'm assuming you're talking about the 4% retirement rule. Are you talking about the? I'm going to assume here that you're talking about the. Let's say you have $1 million in your portfolio, and you draw 4% out of that to live on. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about. And of course, by retirement, that means, you know, say 65, 67, whatever it is you retire at, that 4%, you never eat all that up by the time you reach 96 or 90, 99, 100 years old, whatever it is. It lasts you the rest of your life in your retirement years. That's what I'm assuming you're talking about. I wanted to clarify that, because you may not be. I don't know. Where's my calculator? I was going to pull my calculator up out here. What's that right there? Apps calculator. I'm just going to click on that and see what we get. We have, I thought I kept this in my, that should be in my doc, and it's not in my doc. Keep in doc. There you go. All right, pulling up a calculator here. We have, so let's say we have $1 million. And take that times 4%. See what we get. $40,000. That's $40,000 a year. That doesn't seem like much. I don't know if you can live on that. I could live on that. But that's just me hunkering down and not doing much. I could live on that maybe. But the, and actually, right now, well, that just doesn't seem quite right. I know that there's also the, now is that, first of all, let's clarify this. Is that what you're talking about when you're talking about the 4% rule? Are you talking about that? Is that what you're talking about? Go ahead. Answer the question. Sorry, I'm stumbling around here again. Once again, I'm a cute, confused old
man. Okay, so like the 4% rule is literally just a starting point, not a guarantee, especially now with inflation being absolutely wild. So you definitely need way more than $1 million saved to retire comfortably. Honestly, the whole retirement playbook is changing because of what's been happening economically. So don't give up, but you might need to save more aggressively or work a bit longer than the old formulas suggested.
Yeah, so that's, Well, you didn't really answer the question one way or the other, but that's you kind of did in a roundabout way. I'll just take it for what you got there. So yes, my answer to that is this: there's a lot of different estimations on the whole 4% is like the minimum. I don't know. I that's kind of crazy to think that 4% would be the, because your portfolio still will grow at four. If you take away 4% a year, you're still going to have a portfolio that's still going to grow. The average portfolio grows. Now if you park it into something that's less aggressive, I guess for myself, and I don't know that maybe nobody else is like this. I don't know. Maybe there's not very many people like this. Maybe there's people just want to retire, have their funds come in and be on a set income and just kind of be boring the rest of their life. To me, that just seems kind of like a slow death. I can't stop learning. I can't stop doing something. Unfortunately, to be productive, sometimes you have to invest some money and you have to have something to, you know, you might lose some of that. The odds are you may, say you've got $40,000 you want to put into something and it may go away. It's happened. In my lifetime, it's happened a few times. I have, or you put some money into something and it just doesn't, you know, you never get any returns on anything. So it's just a matter of time. But there are things that, you know, you can do. You can either invest in someone else's business or you can invest in your own. But I've got all kinds of things I do. And I guess I'm trying to kind of diversify in that respect, trying to make sure I'm not just trusting in the market, but I also have ways, there's hobbies that I have that can potentially generate a little bit of income that to kind of offset some of the fixed income ideas. One of those things is, of course, you know, if you develop an app or something that can continue on, you put the work into it now, and the passive income, there's no such thing as really passive income, but say you have some kind of a passive or less tedious income available that's a little more flexible. You can kind of work at it and sell some things, or maybe you do some options trading or whatever you're doing. You're working kind of some. There's other things you can do to increase your portfolio and make some extra change on the side. So it doesn't take a lot of your time, or you're not out digging ditches at the age of 70. You know, and if you are, that's fine. It's good for you. It's great. But I'm not going to do that. That's what the kids are for. There's a lot of things going on there. Anyway, that's where I'm getting at with that whole 4% thing. I think it really, in my opinion, you could probably get away with, at least 6%. I would say 6% at the, would be a good place to start. Now, we've got some other things going on with our funds. I'm not going to get into it too many details, but we've got some other things happening, and there's going to be like a managed fund thing. We got to put this, because we don't have kids, so we've set up a non-prof. It's going to be a foundation that our funds are going to go into. Most of them. Some of them are going to go to nieces and nephews and people like that, and some other places, but it's going to be ongoing support for things, some scholarships and that kind of thing out of that non-prof that will be made available to kids out there. And that's going to continue to live on. It'll probably live 100 years at least beyond our lives. So it's kind of a managed fund thing and there'll be a couple different organizations overseeing it that way. It's not just one organization. If that organization fails, it's not going to cause an issue with something else. There's just some safeguards put into that whole thing. But that's what's happening with that. But anyway, and that's what we're doing. And it's, we're in a different situation than some. If you don't have, depending on what you, it just all depends on what you want to do with your funds or how you want to end up at the end. And that can all fall apart. I mean, you can have some kind of medical issue. Something really bad could happen. Any kind of disaster can happen, and it can all blow away really quickly. So we're not putting our faith in that. But it's at the same time, there is some peace of mind in knowing that, you know, at least we have some positive plan in place. So that's just available. Anyway, that's one thing. Let's go. Who else we got here? The order has kind of switched around here for some reason. I'm not sure exactly why. We'll see what Elena has to say. The archivist.
Greetings, Kevin.
Oh yes. Hello.
China just pulled what some are calling the gold revaluation trigger to take control of global gold price setting, which reminds me of Nixon closing the gold window back in 1971. We've seen empires throughout history use monetary policy to shift power. Rome, Britain, now potentially China. Are we witnessing a fundamental realignment of global financial power? And what does that mean for the dollar's reserve status?
Well, and this, it's interesting. There are actually some people saying the dollar's going to collapse after the World Cup here, or that we're heading for a dollar collapse. That is a possibility. That's not a possibility. What I'm saying is one of the things that are bugging people. There's some people out there saying that kind of thing right now. Now, as far as China goes, China in the past, it's kind of interesting because China in the past has been more into the silver market. They've been traditionally very, very much a silver market or a silver retainer. It's interesting now that they are actually getting involved with the gold market, and they have been investing in gold. They've been buying up gold. I think for the last 20, 25 years, they've been more involved in getting gold, but especially in the last 10 years. I know Russia has done the same thing. They were kind of been in competition for buying up gold. So yeah, I think that they're trying to hedge against some economic issues. I think they see for themselves their bank. The Chinese banking system is built on a house of cards, and I don't know how else to say it. It is a very unstable situation. The yen is it's backed by its own kind of here's what it's worth kind of thing. They play all kinds of games to evaluate their currency, and it's a complicated mess that they've gotten themselves into. I think having the gold is just what they're hoping that they can bail themselves out of an economic bad, downturn should things collapse. It does give them some leverage with regard to what their value, the value of their other currency is. So I good question. I don't know if I answered it. I'm not necessarily here to answer your questions, but I'm here to just kind of talk and with a microphone.
You're touching on something real here.
Touching on the microphone.
China and Russia both accelerating gold accumulation is less about random hoarding and more about preparing for a world where the dollar's dominance weakens, which mirrors what happened when Britain lost reserve currency status after World War II. The thing is, gold only works as a backstop if you've got the industrial base and trade networks to back it up.
Right, that's exactly.
And that's where China's vulnerability shows. They've built this massive manufacturing machine that depends on dollar-denominated global trade, so dumping the dollar is like cutting their own oxygen line. The World Cup collapse talk is noise, but the real pressure on reserve currencies comes from geopolitical fragmentation, not calendar dates.
Yeah, spot on. I think that's a spot on statement to make. I think that's actually some reasonable thought there, Elena. Congratulations, you've actually said something that's worth talking about. The whole idea that we have there is a definite agenda out there in the world market to get rid of the U.S. dollar to keep the U.S. dollar from being the international reserve currency, so to speak. It is, its biggest opposition right now is how they're trading in oil. Oil has always been pinned to the U.S. dollar worldwide, and it's so that in that respect, that has given the U.S. dollar its valuation. And if it had not been for that, the ability to do that, Nixon's unpinning of the dollar. The U.S. dollar used to be pinned to the value of silver, and Nixon was the one who undid that one. so that's when that happened. Of course, the U.S. dollar was so powerful; it was so strong at that time. It took a long time for it to really take to see an effect on that. However, since that time, we have seen the value of the dollar go down incrementally every year, to the tune of about, I don't know, it's a certain percentage. I think it's like 5% per year, 4% per year. If you just hold on to your cash, you know, back in 1832. If you had an ounce of silver, it would buy you a nice suit. Let's say an ounce of gold. If you had an ounce of gold, it would buy you a very well-crafted, very nice suit. You could say whatever it was worth. Today, an ounce of silver will buy you a very nice suit. That's kind of the easiest way I know how to put that. So that it has intrinsic value. And its intrinsic value is based on kind of on a market price. Now, if there is all of a sudden industrial reason to have, you know, some kind of something happens technology-wise that all of a sudden gold becomes extremely valuable, that may offset some of that. It may change. But gold has kind of kept its value with the world economy pretty much for long periods of time. I don't know why. I don't use gold in my day-to-day life. However, there are things, I'm sure there's components, electrical components and all kinds of things that happen in the life around me that probably use gold, I would say probably. But I just have nothing, I'm just not intrigued by shiny stuff. And I guess that's not something that's going to be necessarily in demand for me. You can't eat it. It doesn't taste good in my tea. So I don't know. I've never tried it, I guess. Maybe I should try having some in my tea. Maybe it would change my entire life. I'd be all of a sudden, my precious baby, my gold. And we do the, so that's kind of where I'm at with that kind of stuff. They are trying to unpin the dollar from the world currency market. That way they can get leverage on their own. I personally think doing so would be shooting themselves in the foot. You have to have a standard that is, I would say, strong enough that it makes sense to keep a solid dollar going. But that's just my opinion. I don't know. Let's talk to Artie. I like talking to Artie. Artie's been kind of just mirroring what I've been saying lately, though. So we'll see if Artie has any new insights in the world of,
hey, Kevin, hey, yeah, love the show. Hey, oh, I've loud. Been digging into the June jobs report that just dropped. We added only 98,000 private sector jobs versus the 140,000 expected.
Yeah.
When you combine this with the weak hiring numbers, are we looking at stagflation brewing here? Or is this just the Fed's rate policy finally cooling things down the way they intended?
Yes and no. I think that they did intend to cool some things down. I think, you know, it's funny that we look at it this way. Well, we only added 98,000 jobs instead of 140 that we expected. You know, the 42, that's the 42,000 that the lack of whatever. We added 98,000 jobs. I think just to maintain the positive side of this is sometimes much more important to look at it that way. Just because we expected more, it didn't show up. Now, there are seasonal changes, and I think that some of the things we've gone through, and there's still ripple effects, in my opinion, there's still ripple effects coming from the COVID thing. I think we're not that far away from it. 2022, we were just kind of starting to pull out of this. Well, we would have pulled out of it a lot sooner had not a certain president, Biden, I won't mention any names, but it rhymes with Biden, did some things that really kind of, in my opinion, messed up the economy in the process of what was going on there. So there were, I think we would have pulled out of it much better. We were on the verge of just pulling right out of the slump that was going to happen. We had all those issues with supply chain because of the supposed essential worker stuff. But yeah, in the meantime, I think we have, it, well, it, yeah, the job market, I think, is somewhat indicative and somewhat reflective of what's happening with the economy. I don't think we're heading for this stagflation thing. I don't know. I just don't think we're heading for that necessarily. I think there's going to be a lull. We'll probably see a lull. We'll probably see a correction. We'll see some bumps here in the road, in my opinion. But I don't think we're going to see anything that's going to be. I've got a pretty positive outlook on everything. Not that that matters, but there's going to be some hiccups here, but I think we're going to see some good things happen. It's kind of a Trump
caboose. Look, technically speaking, that 98,000 miss is actually meaningful. It's not just noise, because it shows demand destruction happening faster than the Fed might have expected. And when you layer that with the wage growth still holding stubbornly high, you've got a real tension between labor market softening and persistent inflation. The lingering supply chain disruptions you mentioned absolutely had legs for longer than they should have, but I'd push back a bit. The real issue now is we're in this weird zone where the soft landing worked too well, so employers are finally hitting the brakes harder than anticipated. I wouldn't write off stagflation risk entirely. It's dormant, not dead. But this looks more like planned deceleration that's just hitting rougher than expected.
Yeah, maybe. I don't... Here's the deal, though, Artie. I don't think that they... I don't think they know. They act like they have a control on the economy. I just don't think they control it as much as they think they do. I think the American people, just like during COVID, I think that there were industries that thought, oh, this is it for us. We're going to have to close the doors and nothing's going to happen. The RV industry is a good example of this. The RV industry is probably like, oh, well, they're shutting everything down. We better shut down now. Because you remember during 2008, that whole debacle, the recreational vehicle industry, whether it be boats or trailers or cars or tents and whatever it was, took a big hit. I was heavily invested in it. I had started a business in the recreational marine market in 2006, and by 2007, I quit my full-time job to go directly into that business. And I felt it really good. I was in a great place. When boat shows went from having 100% capacity down to 20%, nobody was buying boats. And it was a very weird... Now, take contrast that with 2020. Everybody's buying boats. Everybody's buying RVs. It was the weirdest thing that ever, nobody expected that. So you just never know what's going to happen with the... Nobody predicted that at all. Nobody was out there saying, oh, you better invest in RVs. They're going to be selling like crazy. Now, I had purchased my first motorhome prior to that. And I got it for a decent deal. If I'd have waited, I probably would have spent twice as much. I probably should have sold it at that point, but... So that's where you're at with all that stuff. There are anomalies, and I don't think that they can factor everything in. The most brilliant people in the world can't. And this gets down to there's a little thing, I was watching this interesting thing where the contrast between somebody who waits for every dip to buy or somebody and really focuses on it and really concentrates on it and spends every day watching the market and checks for the certain percentage dip before they put money into the market. And the other person who just puts $300 in every month and doesn't care. Just buy whatever. Buy, sell, buy, well, whatever, you know, buy, whether it's high or low, you buy it all the time. Over the course of 20 years, there's almost no difference. And that's if somebody does it perfectly. If somebody does the buy the dip perfectly, like everything perfectly. Nobody does. People aren't even near, even brilliant people are not even close to 50% on target every time. And that's kind of what the whole thing about them controlling the economy is. It's they're very low on their ability to do that. They might think that they have control, but they really don't. Now there are things that they can do that can kind of shock the economy and do some different things. But like I said, there's all kinds of factors involved that they can't just, they just don't know. It's a large, there's 320 million people here. 100 million are employed or something like that. So what do you do with that when you have those kinds of numbers? It's just, people do what they're going to do, and you can't, you know, be in everybody's head. So what do we got here? We got all this stuff, marine market. Oh, we're going to talk marine market inflation. Yeah, it's all kinds of things popping up over here in my feed. It's just, I probably should pay more attention to this. It's actually pretty interesting. Yeah. Anyway, I can put topics in here. I can fill in the little screen with topics, auto detect topics. It'll auto detect, which means just looking at the transcripts, it'll detect things and pull stuff up on the side over here. And then it also pulls up articles, it pulls up videos, all kinds of things. And it also, I can just search the web. I can just put something in there and it'll come up with stuff as well. But I'm not doing that right now. So I got this interesting, she sounds like she's more Aussie than anything, South London or South English? What was it? I don't know. It almost sounds Scottish. Let's see what she has to say. She's always an interesting character.
Kevin!
Oh, yes, holy cow.
With the stock market?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it going to crash
after probably.
The World Cup?
Yeah.
I keep hearing rumors about runaway inflation.
Yeah.
Stagflation.
Yeah.
Dollar collapse.
My goodness, take a chill pill.
World economy dropping like a rock.
Yeah.
What's happening?
What?
It all seems crazy, and I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah, well, it is. It's crazy, and you shouldn't do anything. Maybe the first thing you should do is maybe to cut back on the caffeine or whatever it is that you're... I have... Wow. Yeah, there are a lot of rumors out there that something about the World Cup, that's like, oh, after the World Cup, things are going to collapse. I don't think that the World Cup is having that big of an effect on the economy. I think it's good for the economy, and I think there's some areas, some localized areas that are, you know, it's good for whatever is happening there. I think there's some Europeans who've never been to the United States. They've only heard what they think is, you know, that New York and L.A. is all they've ever heard of. They've never heard of anything else. They don't realize we have, you know, the kind of infrastructure we have here and the size of our country. I think that they get lost on that. You know, they tend to think that we're the same size as every other country out there. And I think the entire population of Europe is like 68 million or 70 million, something like that. I'm not positive, somewhere in that range. That's a fifth of what we have here in this country. And of course the land mass itself is, what is it? It's about seven times greater, it's five times greater, whatever it is. And so there's a huge difference. Now, of course, then you even look at Australia, the country is the contiguous United States is about the same size as Australia. They have about 30 million. They have less than 30 million people there. They're right around that range. 30 million people. That's a tenth. And most of Australia is a desert. Everybody lives around the coastal areas. So it's not even really inhabitable with regard to, you know, being able to survive it there very, very, very well. So it's a very different continent. But the size, you know, everybody thinks of, well, it's a big country, but it's not. So it's in terms of everything that's there, everything that's available, and it's just, when you start putting things into perspective like that. Now, at the same time, you can think of what China, you know, what is China? Well, China has supposedly has about five times the population that the U.S. has, or three times, four, five, whatever it is, four times population. But there are some people now saying that that's not the case. China does not have. They lost a lot more people during COVID than what we were being told. There are some people who track consumption, food consumption, as well as electronic data from phones, that kind of thing. And they say there's a strange drop in population there to the tune of, you know, about 100 million people. And that's some conservative estimates. There are some that say that it's dropped way down to 600 to 700 million people, which they had a well over a billion at one point. So And they do have issues with, in terms of reproduction at all, because they've messed with things. You know, they're trying to get birth rates up again. They used to have a one-child rule, that kind of stuff, and now it's not. That's not, of course, that led people to want to have only have men. They wanted only had what to have boys, which was a massive problem that caused a societal social craziness there. But so yeah, I don't know. But my typical standard answer is I don't know. I don't know. That's my typical standard answer. You know, I should just have a button to push for that. We'll see what. See, don't yell at me. Go ahead and read.
Look, you're throwing a lot at me here.
I am.
World Cup, Europe's size, China's population. But let me be straight with you. I don't have hard numbers on China losing 100 million people during COVID. And frankly, those claims about tracking phone data need proper evidence to back them up. What I do know is scale matters.
Yeah,
you're
it does.
Right about that.
Yeah.
The US has real geographic and population advantages most people don't appreciate. But mixing that in with unverified population collapse theory muddles the whole argument.
I have to admit, during her first little sentence there, I spit out my chai. Kind of dribbled that all over the place. Don't worry, I've got a napkin here. I'm cleaning it up. Didn't get on my keyboard. That's important. All right, point taken. I apologize. I don't know where to go with that. Other than just, I think the best thing for us to do at this point is just to draw this show to a conclusion. I think we're just we don't know. In the meantime.
What's wrong with you people?
That's all I have to ask right there. It's just, what's wrong with you people? The let's just do this, and we'll talk about what's going to be on tomorrow's show after this. Or Monday's show, I guess.
It's the news, according to me. Oh, it's the news, according to me. It's the news, according to me. Oh, it's the news. It's the news,
yeah.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news. According to me.
Well, it is the news, according to me. I have, again, folks, thank you for calling in, for listening, all those bot callers. I just want to give them thanks this morning for taking the time to call in and make the podcast what it is. Folks, it is Friday. We're going into the weekend here. Tomorrow's the big day. Tomorrow's the big Independence Day. We'll be watching fireworks we're going to be out at the dock there, probably, maybe on the boat. Who knows what we're going to do. It depends on what the weather's doing. I returned back to work on Sunday. Now, next week, very good possibility that I will be, I think I will be able to do the show. I don't remember where I'm going to be though. Let me just take a quick look. I got time. I have time. I got time to take a look. Don't I? I think I have time to take a look. Hopefully it comes up quickly. I have, good possibility. I will be in Moline, Illinois on Monday morning, and then I'll be in Columbia, Missouri on Tuesday morning. Now, Wednesday morning may not be a show. We'll have to see how that works out. However, Thursday and Friday of next week, there will be a show, probably, most likely. That's the plan, anyway. So, Moline, Illinois, Monday morning is where the show's going to come from. God bless. See ya.